another episode of Dead Try Paranormal. I'm Kelly.
And I'm John.
And today, super excited, we are interviewing Alex Matsuo.
Matsuo!
Who does everything in the world. So she acts, she sings, she directs musical theater. And the reason we're talking to her tonight is because she is also a paranormal investigator, paranormal radio host as well. And she has a new book coming out in October called The Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater. So how you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Very well.
Thank you for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me on. I'm really looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, so you have a lot to talk about. How long have you been doing paranormal stuff now?
Officially with my team about, oh my gosh, almost 4 years now, but I've been involved with the paranormal in active study for about 12, 13 years, doing the like investigating solo and researching and everything. But the paranormal's kind of been a big part of my life since I was really young. So it's been one of those lifelong journeys.
Awesome. And what made you get into it in the first place?
I had experiences when I was younger, between 3 and 7 years old, 8 years old, that were pretty significant. During the summers, I would go to Kentucky to visit my grandmother's family. It's a little river town called Catlettsburg. Very small. I'm related to like 85% of that town. And I wish I was joking about that. And the area is really heavy Scot-Irish folklore and everything. And my great-grandmother, we called her Mama, her property dated back to Civil War times. So it's a really old property. And of course, we're talking about the backwoods, Appalachian Mountains and everything. And I would have the weirdest things happen to me every night. I was sleeping in that house, and from like my bed tipping over to hearing somebody walk around the house to banging on the wall. And every time I would ask my mama what was going on, she said, "Oh, it's the devil trying to get in."
Oh my gosh.
So, is that all?
Yeah, that's it.
Relax, Alex. It's just the devil.
Right? Or it's like, "Oh, them spirits are trying to get into the house again." I'm like, "What? What?"
Oh, mama, they're already here.
And amazingly enough, you know, anytime I had experiences and I would tell my family about it, they would acknowledge it. It's like, "Oh, yeah, no, it was a ghost." Okay, moving on. So, how did you sleep last night? What do you want for breakfast?
Oh my
gosh. And I'm like, "What? We're not going to talk about this or deal with it?" So that was it was mildly terrifying staying over there growing up. But I actually eventually got used to it, and you know, I kind of grew up with it. You know, especially since my family was so apathetic about it.
Right.
But my mother, she was very adamant about keeping me out of the paranormal. I couldn't even read the Goosebumps books when I was growing up.
Oh my gosh.
I couldn't watch Are You Afraid of the Dark? I did anyway. I snuck it in, but, I couldn't look into anything that had anything to mildly do with the paranormal. So my mother really didn't want me to get involved. She thought it would open doors to things that are more sinister, which partially true, I guess, but I also came to find out that my mother was very involved in pendulum work, dowsing, tarot cards and everything, and she, you know, raised Southern Baptist, our whole family. So I think she felt some guilt, or she thought that she ingrained the paranormal in me somehow, because she did it while she was pregnant with me too. So, yeah.
Wow. Did your grandmother grow up having paranormal experiences too? And that's why, I mean, she was like, "Yeah, it's definitely ghosts and stuff trying to get in the house."
You know, my grandmother told me a lot of stories, especially about her time growing up in Catlettsburg and the things that people would see. Like a couple times a year, there's a blood red moon in the sky. And it wasn't even like, "Oh, you know, the legend is that two brothers killed each other in the woods one night." No, it was, "Oh, yeah, my cousins, George and Brian, went out in the woods and ended up, you know, shooting each other out. And then there was this blood red moon in the sky."
Oh my God.
You know, so that was the crazy thing when she would tell me these stories. These were people that she knew directly. So it wasn't just rumors. And I mean, the town was small enough that I guess anything could be a rumor, but at the same time, we're also related to, like I said, 85% of the town.
Oh, right.
The town's gotten a lot bigger since then. If you're familiar with the movie We Are Marshall,
yes.
Yeah, so that area, so Huntington and the school, it's right across the river from Catlettsburg. So Marshall's like the official college of that area. So that's like that area that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff involved in the plane crash that killed the football team, people walking around the woods, creatures walking around in the woods. And the backwoods always scared the heck out of me. And my mom lived there until she died, and she was surrounded by those woods. And I'm like, how do you sleep? Like, how do you,
how
do you deal with that? So, you adjusted.
And now I'm gonna play ignorant for a second, but isn't Bobby Mackey's in Kentucky?
It's in Kentucky. It's more near Louisville, or if you're from Kentucky, it's Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah,
like New Orleans.
It's a few hours away. It's a few hours away, but I don't know if you guys know Wes Forsythe. He does paranormal filler. He has the theory that everybody in the paranormal is connected to Kentucky somehow. So,
6 degrees of separation, Kentucky style.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you ever go back to that house? Is it still around?
So my great grandmother had, there was two houses on the property, and after my great grandmother died, this is actually the trippiest part, and this is why I'm pretty sure the rest of the family does believe in the paranormal. After my great grandmother died, nobody moved into that house. Like, it's just sitting there.
Oh man, just up for grabs, a whole house.
Oh my gosh.
Ceilings, but the ceiling's falling in now. They won't bulldoze it. It's just sitting there. Like, nobody's touching it, literally.
Has anybody investigated it?
No, and I'm not sure how my family kind of knows I'm into the paranormal now, but, it's one of those things where I want to ask, but I'm afraid I'm going to get labeled a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, nobody has taken it, and it's essentially a free house. Like, it's a free house up for grabs on a huge piece of land.
Wow.
And, but nobody's taking care of it either. So no one even wants to go in there, to upkeep it.
Huh.
So that tells you something.
Is there any history? Did you do any history on the house? Maybe to find out where some of this stuff was happening?
Well, there's been, we had a lot of, well, not we, as in I wasn't there at the time. But how my family essentially got out of the Great Depression, or avoided the turmoil of the Great Depression, was they made moonshine.
Yes.
There was a lot of moonshine politics and drama that happened, apparently. I don't know the specific details, but I know a considerable amount of people were injured or died or felt slighted by the Rice clan. So if there's anyone listening from the tri-state area, yes, that's the Rices are my family. So
you can find her at alexmasayo.com.
It's like, geez. So, but the land's always been owned by the Rices, and everything's pretty much, I've learned a lot about small town politics, especially after my mother passed away. You can't get access to certain things, like, even though it's technically against the law. I mean, okay, look at the Kim Davis thing. So that's a classic example right there. trying to get any information about the land. Only thing I found, it's always been tied to family. I know my great-grandmother had some Native American in her. I think it might have been Cherokee. I'm not exactly sure. Something's really weird in that house. I don't think it's a demon or anything like that. I think it might be something just tied to the land. It could be Native American, or it could be people from the early 1900s, Great Depression era, who, you know, who felt slighted by my, you know, my family.
Right.
Or I know that my great-grandmother, my mama's mother, so great-great-grandmother, she had a lot of infants who died, like a lot of infants. I think she had maybe like over a dozen children, but only a few survived.
Oh God, that's tragic.
Yeah, and my mama was pretty sure that she killed them. So,
oh my God.
Gosh.
It was all like sudden infant death syndrome. So,
breaking news.
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh.
Not even breaking news. My great grandmother said that till the day she died. There's a lot of spiritual turmoil over there.
Yeah,
so.
All of the above, I think. I don't think we have to pick one. I think they're all teaming up and doing stuff over there. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
So that was in Kentucky, and is that why you went all the way to San Diego for college, or?
Get away.
I grew up in San Diego. My grandmother was the only one who got out. So
okay.
She was the only one who left, and I think my lucky stars. lived in San Diego my whole life, but I went to Kentucky 2 or 3 weeks at a time during the summers. Yeah, and then I moved to Raleigh almost about 2.5 years ago. So,
okay.
Yeah.
great. And so then you were already into it as a kid. You were interested. You said you started investigating solo for a while.
Yeah, I don't endorse this practice, but especially during
Alex,
high school.
Alex, I'm with you there.
During high school, especially after I got my driver's license, mainly after I got my driver's license, I would sneak out of the house and go ghost hunting in Old Town, which was the original location of San Diego before it moved, you know, to the, you know, closer to the water. In Old Town is the Whaley House, where, yeah, everyone's like, oh yeah, the Whaley House.
Yeah, all the nods.
Yeah. So Whaley House, the El Campo Santo Cemetery, the old mission, like the original settlement of, you know, the Spaniards when they came here. So they call San Diego the birthplace of California, specifically Old Town. So it's an old area, fairly haunted. There's also the Cosmopolitan. I think Ghost Adventures did an episode over there. So I would sneak out at night and go ghost hunting by myself. And I did that throughout my high school years, actually. And then I had a pretty terrifying incident when I was a senior in high school. So I kind of took a break from it for a little bit when I started going to college. That's pretty much where the solo thing started.
Okay. Something terrifying happened while you were investigating a location on your own?
No, this actually happened in my house, in the room I was sleeping in my bedroom. I was always fairly convinced that my grandparents' house was not necessarily haunted, but I think a lot of transients came through. At least that's what several psychics told me, because I lived in that house for quite a bit. I was laying in bed. I wasn't asleep yet. I was about to go to sleep, so about to close my eyes and everything. And I got held down by something. Like, literally, I could feel the pressure on my shoulders. I actually thought maybe it was my mom. Like, you know, maybe I ticked her off or something and she was, you know, needing to talk to me or something.
Oh, no. But at least it wasn't your great-great-grandmother.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah, Mammy Hatton. That actually had to terrify me.
You would not wake up.
I heard the stories. And I actually felt and heard something breathe on me. And I, for whatever reason, I decided to open my eyes because I'm like, what is this? And I saw this hooded woman over me, all black clothing, black skin. And I'm not talking about, like, African-American thing. It's, like, black as, you know, this headphones are talking like this color.
Yep.
And scared the bejesus out of me. And I couldn't move. And eventually I was able to, like, get my wits together or something. It stopped and I just ran to my mom's room. And no joke, 17-year-old me, I slept with my mom for about 3 months after that.
Oh my God.
Like, it scared the crap out of me. And my mom's room was down the hall from my bedroom. And my cat would always hiss at the room every time she walked by it, like she was hissing at something. I couldn't even stay in that room to change my clothes. And then at night when I was sleeping, you know, and because my mom had a California king-size bed, so it was really awesome to sleep on it. I would look down the hall where my room was, and it was always darker than the rest of the hallway, and I always felt like something was watching me, and I would see, like, a shadow there. So I didn't get the guts to sleep in there until... we had a friend, because I was, like I said, I was raised Southern Baptist, but no one was really interested in coming in and praying, you know, over me or the room or anything.
Okay.
So I had a friend who was part of the Greek Orthodox Church, and they sent over a guy to check it out, and then he left. They came back with an old woman who did this whole deliverance style thing, but it was more involved with, like, olive oil, dipping it in water, crossing me. Dipping the oil and water again, crossing, like, other part of my face. Greek Orthodox Church handles demons very differently than the Catholic Church, I learned. It wasn't an exorcism or anything like that, but it was definitely like a prayer deliverance type of thing. And I guess with the oil and the water, they were looking for the evil eye. So essentially, I guess the evil eye showed up. And so they kept doing the prayer and the olive oil thing, like, over, like, my face and my body and over the door, the windows, until that eye disappeared.
Oh.
So there was something there. I still felt unsettled sleeping in that room at night, so I always slept with the TV on or some sort of light. And that was until the day I moved out.
I don't blame you. And that was a house that you grew up in, and nothing ever happened until you were 17?
I had one thing happen when I was, I want to say, maybe 7 or 8 years old. It was fairly minor, and it was actually in that same room, because it was my grandmother's house, and then my mother and I moved in. It wasn't, like, the house in Kentucky. It was the house my grandmother owned. I was laying in on one of the guest beds, and it felt like something hit me on the head. Like, literally, someone came up to me and just bopped me on the forehead. Nothing up above. I was so confused, and I'm like, okay, I'll get out of the room. So, and that room ended up being my bedroom. So, you know, 9 years later, you know, woman in black scaring the bejesus out of me.
Wow, that's crazy.
So, yeah.
I can't believe you don't want to investigate that place or haven't thought about them.
I kind of did a little investigation in my grandmother's house or the house I grew up in San Diego. And all I was told, because I had a few psychics go in there, I didn't tell them anything else that anyone said. And they said that basically the house is welcoming the transient spirits passing through.
Oh, so they were all passerbys?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I would have weird things come up right before an investigation. Like, I would hear footsteps in the house. Something would be knocked over. And, I mean, once I became a seasoned investigator and I knew better, I would just say, hey, if you mean me no harm, sure, stay for a little bit, but you got to move on. Like,
right.
You got 24 hours after that.
You got to go.
I think, going back to investigate a place you grew up in, too, is weird. Like, my childhood condo is actually up for sale. I really do want to run in there with a realtor just to see it and all. Yeah. But, somebody said to me, they're like, oh, you're an adult now, Kelly. You should buy it. And no, absolutely not. Like, where all the scary stuff happened, decades later, I'm not living there again.
I don't blame you.
Is that place for sale? Do people, is it well known that, that it's haunted in that area? Is that why that people aren't interested in buying it? Or is it just in a bad location?
Are you talking about my mamaw's house?
Yeah.
Well, the property is still owned by our family. Because my great uncle has a house on that same property. And literally the house just sits there. There's a lot of cousins, who are either looking at houses or buying houses. I mean, because my family owns a lot of property in Catlettsburg. So everyone takes up all the, because even my mom was living on one of the properties in Catlettsburg too, right before she died. I got all these cousins that are like, hey, I want to stay in Aunt Doris's house, or I want to stay in June's trailer, but no one wants to stay in Mama's house. Yeah. So.
Huh. So you grew up with it, and then have you had a lot of experiences out in the public? Because, I mean, the whole reason you have your book coming out, the 10th Avenue Theater, is because you worked there.
Yeah, I was. I worked there as an actor, director, playwright. I've had the 10th Avenue Theater a part of my life for quite some time as an actor. It was funny because I always thought there was something weird there. Like, from the day I walked in, I'm like, this has a weird, really weird energy to it. And I thought maybe it was because it was a new theater. Jeff Cota, the guy who owns it, he was just still putting it together. He actually owned the property for, I want to say, 6 years before he actually opened it up as a theater.
Okay. Interesting. Because you always hear these old theaters. So there's layers and layers of history. But you're saying this one is actually a new one.
It was actually built in the 1920s as a chapel.
Okay.
It was owned by one of the biggest Baptist churches in San Diego. It wasn't the one I went to, ironically. The First Baptist Church of San Diego. They had a huge church downtown, which is funny because I think it was actually the third building that they had downtown. They started in the mid-1800s, so right when San Diego was starting to develop. Alonzo Horton actually gave the First Baptist Church of San Diego a significant amount of money to build a church. And they built this church, and then they tore it down, and they moved a couple blocks over. They built another structure, and then a few years later, they tore it down, and then they built the building that's there today. It's called, we call it the White Chapel, and that building is still there. And in the early 1920s, a really wealthy donor gave money to the church and said, hey, I'm giving you this money to build a chapel, a 24-hour chapel, so that the military that was coming in, they would have a place to pray when they came into port. Because San Diego is a huge military town. We have five or six bases, so mainly Naval and Marine Corps. And the building also served as the youth ministry building. So, the youth groups would do their services there. There was still a chapel. Because the First Baptist Church had about 3,000 members, I want to say. 3,000 or 4,000. Because they would do three or four services every Sunday. So all these mega churches that are doing it like that right now, it was kind of been like that since the 30s and 40s. So basically the theater was a chapel until the 90s. The chapel did see a few deaths, and then Jeff bought the property, and part of the deal was And the reason why Jeff bought the property in the first place, in his words, is it was a good deal. So they were selling it for pretty cheap. And we're talking about a downtown property in the Gaslamp District in San Diego, which is like where all the nightlife is and everything.
Yeah.
And all the historical stuff is. So he just bought the property because it was for a good price. He didn't know what he wanted to do with it yet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so part of the deal was they asked him to hang on to the organ, to the church's organ, until they can move it out. And on the day that a couple of volunteers came to get the organ, Jeff was helping them move it, and they told Jeff all of these ghost stories about the building. And Jeff was like, huh, okay, interesting. He didn't say anything to anybody until people started coming to him with experiences. He opened up some of the offices for rental, and some of the tenants who were renting the offices were saying that they would hear a child laughing, going up and down the flight of stairs. Which is interesting because a little girl did die in the stairwell. She was running a little bit too fast down the stairs. She was trying to play a game with the pastor that was chasing after her, and she lost her footing and she fell and split her head open, basically.
Oh, no.
Yeah, her name's Missy, and her and I are good friends.
That's nice.
She's actually talked to a few of my investigators, scared the crap out of a few of my Marine investigators, and sent them running down the stairs.
Go, Missy.
And I want to say she's about 12 or 13. A lot of investigators who go into the building to try to talk to her, they talk to her like she's 8. And I'm like, nah, she's a little bit older than that. She's not going to be amused by the ball.
Right.
She's not amused.
Bring her a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And then the pastor that was chasing after her, there's not a lot of records on him. But given that he was hanging out in the youth ministry, it's very likely that he was a youth pastor. He actually was very much overridden with guilt after Missy's death. And I believe it was like the day after or the Monday after the JFK assassination, he actually committed suicide in the choir loft.
Oh, wow.
So he's there and many people can pinpoint where they think that he died. Basically, I'll say, hey, because the stories are on the 10th Avenue Theater's website. So I can't take anyone seriously like a psychic who says, oh, someone committed suicide here. I'm like, yeah, okay. But I'll ask them. I say, can you tell me where you think it happened? And they'll get it right. Like every person that's been in there has been able to pinpoint the spot.
Oh,
so,
that's awesome.
Yeah, they can pinpoint the spot, and they can pinpoint the spot from the actual floor where the choir loft is. So, because I'll say, hey, do you feel anything weird in this room? And they'll go, like, in the back. There's a theater on one of the upper floors, and the dressing room back there is parallel to the spot on the stage where people feel, like, that energy. And I'm like, yep, we're exactly in that spot where he jumped. So, it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's a neat validation.
Yeah, exactly. It's good validation. And there's also another ghost there. Her name's Carol LaRocque. She was a very much an OCD church member. She wanted everything to be perfect and whatnot. And the doors have been fixed since then, but it drove her crazy that the bathroom stall doors were hinged in the opposite direction.
Oh, jeez.
And so instead of all being on the right side or the left side, the stall on the right was hinged on the right side and the stall on the left was hinged on the left side. So they would open like, you know, French, you know, kind of French door style, God. But they're two different stalls. One of those little things, but she haunts the bathrooms on the fourth floor.
It's still driving her crazy. No solace after death.
Well, it's funny because we'll actually get responses on I'm going to say the ovulus because we get kind of funny reactions from there. I don't know if we could call this provoking either, but if we want to get a response out of her, we'll just start like tearing up like toilet paper and putting it in the toilet or putting paper towels on the floor,
oh, no.
You know, making things messy, and we'll start getting like clean, pick it up.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Or it's like dirty, you know, frustrated.
God, so she was everybody's favorite coworker, I'm sure, while she was alive.
Oh, yeah. She was one of those church members where, you know, she meant well, and that's what made you tolerate her. But otherwise, you're like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Did she die of just natural causes outside of the church?
Natural causes, and she had her funeral in the chapel.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. But she's still there. They fixed the door since then, so I guess she's quieted down lately.
Oh, nice.
It's a ridiculous ghost story. who wants a bathroom? Sorry. She probably gets mad that I laugh every time I tell her story too, when I do tours. When I'm in San Diego, we do tours, and I'm just like, I can't tell the story at the straight face, guys. I'm sorry.
Right. Did you have experiences there on your own just as an employee of the place before investigating with your team?
Yeah, actually, I did. So I was there as I was doing a staged reading of a play that I had written, and I was supposed to have help in the light booth, but it ended up not happening. So I told my cast, I'm like, hey, guys, here's the deal with the lights. You're going to have to wait until I run upstairs, which, you know, is the second floor, run upstairs and turn the lights down on the board, and then you can come out. So turn the house, you know, the audience lights down. Did a practice run. You know, of course, I'm heavy breathing and I'm like, oh, this is going to suck, but that's fine. So I did my introductions of the play. And then I run upstairs to, because I saw the house lights are up. I could see all the everyone's faces in the audience. I run upstairs to the booth, and lo and behold, I look out onto the stage, and I'm thinking as I'm opening the door, wow, it's really dark out there. And I open the door, and the house lights were already down. So, wow. Yeah.
Wow.
And I asked my cast, and I even saw it on the, because my mom took a video of it. And they're like, oh yeah, we thought you like ran up there because the lights went down right away. I'm like, really? So wow. It's like, thanks, ghost.
Yeah, helpful ghost.
Props. So I appreciate that. So that was really one of the more significant events I had. I was like, okay, there's definitely something here. Also, the sides of the theater are covered in curtains, so you can't see the wall because they put tables back there. They'll hide props back there, so it's right. A curtain. And no joke, I was sitting on the side. I wasn't sitting in the house, and I just had my hands, you know, on the wall. And I basically felt a hand like interlace with my fingers behind the curtain, which, you know, that kind of makes you feel like, oh, hey.
Yeah, that's creepy. Like,
oh, hey, what's up? So after that, the night of the sage reading, I'm like, okay, so Jeff, I have a team. I want to get in here. How can I do a ghost hunt here? And he basically said, I've been wanting someone to come in here. Here are the keys, have fun. So for two years, I had unlimited access to this building with my team. So.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. And you know, there have been some nights where it'll be really active, and then there's some nights where nothing's going on, and then we just go to the burger joint down the street and, you know, have a burger. And it gave me some time to develop relationships with these people, these spirits too. And that's basically what the book is about. It's about my team's access to this building and essentially all of our case studies and what happened when we first brought a group to the theater, the images that we caught. It's definitely haunted. If people ask me why, I can't really say. It's an awesome space. I mean, it's 4 or 5 floors of, you know, theaters, dance studios, art galleries, because you have a main stage, there's a theater on the 4th floor, there's a writing room on the 3rd floor where you can just sit and write, there's a gym, there's 2 art galleries. I mean, the place is a wonderful space. So, I mean, it's like, why not? Why can't it be haunted?
Did you use the place as like training almost for your team?
Yes, that's where I took all my rookies. And funny, the first night that I brought my team there, I was thinking, it's probably not that haunted. I mean, maybe some footsteps, but nothing like dramatic. And that just happened to be the same night. 2 of my team members, Jay and Hurst, they're in the Marine Corps. It was the end of the night for our investigation. Things were already really active, but Jeff specifically wanted me to put my key back on the 4th floor because he had to use it for another client. And so I'm like, that's fine. And I'm like, oh, I forgot to return the key. Jeff, Hurst, can you guys take the key up to the 4th floor? And they're like, oh yeah, we can do it. So I'm waiting with Jay's wife, Beverly, up in the lobby. I was like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if they like saw something and got really scared and we hear all these screams running down the stairs? And no joke, 5 minutes later, we hear this, oh my God.
And, yes.
And I see Jay like jumping multiple stairs.
Oh God.
Like, to get down. And Hearst is going down the stairs with every step going, no, 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 no. And I'm like, okay, what happened? And I have the recording and it's amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's amazing to listen to still to this day. And Jay's like, we were returning the key, and he has a really thick drawls. He's like, we're returning the key, and we're standing there, and I have my camera, and Hearst has like the audio recorder, and we just hear this little girl's voice say, Mommy.
Oh my God.
Wow.
And I'm like, really? And they caught it on the audio recorder and the video camera.
Oh, sweet.
So, like, clear as day, this little girl going, Mommy? And...
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, get back up there. And they're like, no.
That's why I was going to get to that. Yeah. Like, you say they're still part of your team.
Yeah.
They didn't get fired actually, after that.
Yeah, they are. They are still part of my team. Well, Hearst ended up resigning a few years ago, like a year and a half to, no, it was like 3 years ago, because he was starting a family. So I was like, that's cool. And Jay is still a part of the team from Pennsylvania. So, yeah.
Oh, great.
Didn't quite scare him off.
No. So how did you put your team together for all the people that always ask? Because I hear that all the time. How do you start a team? Like,
funny you ask that. I actually wrote a book about that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. It's called More Than Ghosts, A Guide for Working Residential Cases in the Paranormal Field. And essentially it was about how I started the team. And the book is really just the horror stories, literally not from a paranormal sense, but just the kinks and all the things you have to work through when you start a team.
Mm-hmm.
How to pick your team members, getting the paperwork. So basically I'm hoping that by telling my story of how I started Association of Paranormal Study, people can avoid those mistakes that I made. So I just put a call out to people on Craigslist of all places.
Oh my God, you actually did?
I did, yeah, that too.
I met a lot of weird people.
Oh yeah.
But I actually ended up getting some of the best team members I could ever have asked for. Obviously, I filtered out all the crazies, and I think I got, like, in San Diego alone, I got, like, 300 requests.
Holy cow.
I actually only ended up interviewing maybe 20 of them, and then I picked out, like, 8 people. So, yeah, wow. It was interesting.
So none of it was people that you were already friends with or anything? It was all just brand new?
I was very low-key about, like, my belief in the paranormal, especially, you know, in college and everything, because I don't want to get labeled as, you know, a freak or, you know, crazy, yeah, that type of thing. So yeah, we basically got together. I drew up some paperwork, some contracts, and we just started going. We had our first case like a few months later. They had already had the 10th Avenue Theater incident, so they were good to go to do a case by then. And yeah, we've been going since 2011.
That's great.
So,
and
yeah,
now you have the 2 chapters of it, right?
Yes. After I moved to Raleigh in June of 2013, essentially I was just going to manage the San Diego team from a distance. You know, the director was still going to do their thing, but I would just more oversee and manage. But then, I don't know, I missed it, and I wanted to get back into it, so I started a team out here and... Again, used Craigslist, and I actually ended up finding a girl who was almost exactly like me, which is really awesome. And then an old friend that I had met in North Carolina before, she was like, hey, I'm interested in joining, and I'm like, oh, okay. Because cool. I had family in North Carolina in Winston-Salem, so that's where I met this girl. And yeah, so I actually have a really awesome team, and we do a lot of... I'm finding that the cases out here in the East Coast are very different from the ones on the West Coast.
Really? How so?
The ones on the West Coast are very Native American-based, especially in San Diego. You know, especially in San Diego on the military bases or on the coastline, where essentially the Spaniards introduced all these diseases to the Native Americans out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a lot of mass graves. You know, we also have Gold Rush ghosts, and I don't know, it's just very different. Whereas out here, I'm finding a lot of these spirits are tied to some sort of war, revolutionary, civil war, slavery. We actually, out here in Durham, North Carolina, we have the Stagville Plantation, and it's one of the only plantations in the U.S. that still has the slave quarters up.
Oh.
So. I haven't had the chance to investigate there yet, but we're kind of in the talks to get it done.
Wow.
I was actually part of a theater group that did a performance in the slave quarters. It was called Let Them Be Heard. And essentially they took all these stories from slaves and they performed them as monologues, like around the slave quarters and everything. Mm. And I just had some of my equipment out just to be like, hey, would you guys be okay if I recorded some of this, you know? And we were getting some weird stuff happening, and I thought that was fascinating because, one, you had actors saying these words that were said by real people who were slaves in a location where slaves actually live. So I can imagine there were some triggers going on there. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a method that a lot of paranormal investigators use.
Yep. Yep. So I want to get back in there, and I'm friends with people of the theater community, so I'm like, hey, can we, like, resurrect this and try this again?
Pun intended.
Yeah. Literally. Oh, yeah, I see what you did there. Anyway.
This girl, she gets it.
Yeah.
I mean, you train a lot of them. Is that how you started doing your teaching online? I see that you do a paranormal class.
Yeah, I do paranormal classes for liveparanormal.com, and they're completely free. So if you're ever free on a Wednesday night at 9 p.m., definitely take advantage. I've always been a teacher in some way, shape, or form. I've taught theater classes, regular academics. You know, I've taught college, high school. Right now I'm teaching pre-K, you know, 3 and 4 year olds. And
theater?
Those kids are a lot easier to deal with than some college students I once had. So, you know, I'll take it. I've always been a teacher. I love teaching. I love, I guess, sharing what I'm passionate about with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already hosting a radio show, The Wicked Domain, on liveparanormal.com. And Rob, who runs the site, he said, hey, you know, would you ever be interested in teaching classes? And I said, sure, you know. And basically, I'd just been taking parts of the curriculum that I have to train my team and turning them into actual classes. So, and I would do, like, small webinars on Skype with my team to train them anyway. So
is
basically
it,
expanding that.
Is it live and there's a Q&A at the same time?
Yep. I've got video, chat room.
Wow.
The only thing that we're working on that I really want is I want people to be able to see my slides, or my notes.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're working on that part of it, but it's cool. I mean, people can type their questions in the chat room, and I'll answer them live, and it's good. It's good stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I enjoy it, and I don't believe in really charging anything for it, especially since we're not doing, like, the slides or anything like that. And there's people out there who want to know more about the paranormal, but they don't have, like, access or the budget to get that training or that knowledge. And I'm a photographer, so the whole orb debate drives me nuts. If I can impart knowledge in a benevolent fashion to help alleviate the whole orb debate, that's a success in my mind.
I support that very highly. Orbs are, like, insane. Like, every second, it's a ghost, it's a ghost. That'll be the only thing that happened in any given location. Oh, it's haunted, yep. Though, because I caught an orb.
No. Oh, it's a ghost, and photographers call it crap on my lens.
That website again, just so we know?
Liveparanormal.com.
Okay.
If you go to my website, alexmatsuo.com, I do have a page for the paranormal classes, so people can check it out.
Awesome.
And that's Alex Matsuo, is M-A-T-S-U-O.
M-A-T-S-U-O.
Matsuo!
You need that sound effect on there for your website when they log in.
You can take that, Alex.
So is the class, like, is it designed a certain way, like 4 weeks specific lessons, and then it changes every month back to the beginning, or what?
Right now I'm changing it to, it's a new class every week. I'm trying to feel out what people want to learn about. Last night I did a Black Eyed Children class, and there was, like, a ton of people watching that. And, like, a few weeks before that, I did a class on historical research, and, like, 2 people showed up. So,
okay.
So I'm like, okay. So I'm trying to feel out what people are into and what people want me to expand on. So, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah. I mean, anything you do is great anyway, because people want to learn. And, you know, I know people, we've actually interviewed people that teach the public, and, you know, mm-hmm. one thing any given person can say is, well, why take a class? You could learn it from anyone who wants to teach you, but mm-hmm. it's that last part, anyone who wants to teach you. So a lot of people don't. So if you can find a class.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
And then what's your radio show all about, The Wicked Domain?
The Wicked Domain. It's mainly me being able to find people in the paranormal and pick their brains. You know, why do you believe in this? Or do you really take this as serious as you think you, or as you come across? Or, you know, just asking like the nitty gritty questions, you know, away from the traditional Q&A style of interviews. I like to keep my shows very conversational, very relaxed. So, and like I said, it's just a way for me to get to talk to people. That's really why I did it. I also hosted a few other shows, Paranation for Evermore Paranormal. And then I also hosted another radio show called Paranormal Insider Radio. And all those have been joys to be a part of. So, and I really like radio. And people think I need to make it more theatrical. And I'm like, eh, you know, my whole life's a stage. I need a break. So
yeah, that's what you do all the time. How did you get involved with all of that?
I actually started out as a producer for Paranormal Insider Radio. And then the host stepped down. She was a fabulous host, but she decided to step down. And so I took over as host. And I was only supposed to do it temporarily, but then it turned into a permanent thing. I don't know. I just realized, oh, hey, I like this. So I like talking to people. I like asking the difficult questions. Also, I like to ask fun questions, too. I can also deal with dead air and awkward conversations very well. So
nice. Important.
You know, I guess that's not quite a great talker. when I have a good talker on, I'm like, yes. like I said, I do ask some of the more difficult questions. I'll bring up a little controversy if I need to, or if there is controversy to talk about. Like I said, and I do that to not just be part of every other radio show that's out there.
I was going through your website and, you know, obviously before interviewing you, seeing what you've done and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to something. You were talking back and forth, but you had mentioned, you were saying something about like Harold Price and Hans Holzer and something you were...
Yeah, it was just people. Those were just folks I researched and everything. Right. Obviously, I'm in touch with Alexandra Holzer, you know, his Hans Holzer's daughter. Fantastic lady. Those were just basically the people I researched when I was younger. Because I would go to the libraries and check out books by them. So, like, the Warrens and all that stuff. Because I was really, man, when I was younger and having all these experiences in my mamaw's house and wondering what the frick was I dealing with, not getting the answers from my family, I would just go to the library and check out their books and... I would always return them the same day because Lord knows I couldn't bring them home. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Or if I did, I would hide them.
Okay. I think that's what it was. You'd mentioned something about the daughter. Yeah. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So then it's September right now. You have your book coming out on October 8th. And so this is your fourth book, yes?
Yeah, because my first book was The Haunted Actor, and then I wrote a book on how to write because I do a lot of writing and people want to know how I do so much writing without, you know, going crazy. So yeah. That's what 10,000 words is about. And then my third book, the first three are all self-published. My third book is More Than Ghosts, A Guide to Working Residential Cases in the Paranormal Field. And I mainly wrote that because I was tired of cleaning up the messes of other teams who would say the wrong things to clients or didn't know, or put together a team but didn't know what they were doing or wanted to learn more about being on a team or how a team should be run. Residential cases are so different from public locations.
Yeah.
And people don't really know how to differentiate that. And that's not necessarily saying that they're not smart or anything, but there's very different approaches and techniques in doing that. And that information isn't widely out there. It's just more spoken about. And I mean, people online these days are so eager to jump down people's throats and attack them or, you know, bash them or criticize them in a negative way or insult them. But a lot of times these people may not even know any better. So it's up to us to kind of help each other out and put out material that is good resource. There are good resources to research this. So that's why I wrote More Than Ghosts. And plus, client work is kind of a passion of mine. I love being able to help people with their hauntings, get some clarity on what's going on, because I didn't get that when I was younger. So I would get the, oh, yeah, it's the devil. Moving on. What do you want for dinner tonight? Yeah, and then this fourth book that's coming out, it's my first published book. It's going to be published by Llewellyn. They're a big major publisher in the paranormal, supernatural, cult field. So it's a big honor to be published by them.
That's awesome. Yay.
I'm excited. As it's getting closer, I'm like, Man, this process has taken over a year, and I'm just thinking of like the whole journey that I've been through with this book and interviewing people. And yeah, it's just been nuts. It's been absolutely nuts. So I'm excited. The book comes out October 8th. And like I said, it's basically all my case notes and experiences and personal diaries of the 10th Avenue Theater. And I also did a lot of historical research, which I put in there. Also, any roadblocks I ran into, I believe with the whole Missy death and the pastor's suicide, there's not a lot on there. And I know people would chalk it up to, oh, it never happened. But this was told to Jeff by a church member who was volunteering. And also, I mean, this church is the biggest Baptist church in San Diego. I think a child dying on the premises would have been pretty hot news. Pretty hot news. And a pastor committing suicide would have been pretty hot news and a little controversial that might have hurt the growth of the church. That's kind of one of those things I tell people to keep in mind. I'm like, not saying that the church did anything bad. I'm just saying things might have been swept under the rug.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And how come you're doing this book different and getting it published?
I was actually, I had a friend who had gotten published by Llewellyn. Her name's Deborah Robinson. She's written a bunch of fabulous books for Llewellyn. And she was familiar with my work, and she said, hey, would you ever be interested in being published? And I'm like, sure. And
yeah,
essentially, I got in contact with Llewellyn. I sent them some samples and sent them a draft, and they loved it and wanted to publish it. And I mean, I went back and forth about it because I'm like, is this something that I want to have control over, that I want published or self-published, you know, with just me and the people that I know? And on the other hand, I was talking to my mom about it because I was kind of going back and forth. I'm like, am I selling out? Am I selling out the ghosts? I mean,
yeah,
I have a relationship with them, and in a weird way. And I talked to Jeff about it. I said, hey, how would you feel about this? And if I didn't have Jeff's blessing, I wouldn't have done it. And Jeff was on board. He was like, hey, yeah, let's do it. And I told him all the negatives that could happen. I'm like, listen, you're probably, after this book comes out, you might get like hundreds of teams trying to get in there. And
yeah.
And then if nothing happens, they'll be like, oh, it's not haunted. And you
know, yes. So. Going back to before, oh, no, that was all fake. That was just not.
Yeah, exactly.
Just wanted to sell her a little
oh,
book.
This is all going to, you know, this is all full of crap. You know, I warned him, and he's like, no, nah, you know what? It's fine. And I'm like, okay. So, and I, you know, and I think the 10th Avenue Theater is such a special place, and it means a lot to me. And it's a wonderful place to go to. And every time I take new people to the 10th, they end up falling in love with it. I mean, it's more than just a bunch of like scares and thrills and everything. People actually start to feel connected with these ghosts, almost like on a friendship level. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And the ghosts have stories to tell. There are stories to be told. And that's something that we get with every visit. We get a new story, or we learn about someone new. Like, we didn't really learn about Carol LaRocque until about a year ago. You know, we were always wondering, what's going on with the bathrooms? Why do the bathrooms have such a weird vibe to it? And why do we keep getting, like, aggression when someone forgets to flush the toilet? So we didn't learn about Carol LaRocque until, like, a year and a half ago. So stories are still coming out, and we're still getting to know people in there. And honestly, the more investigators and researchers we can get in there, especially the reputable ones, I think that will help the case for the 10th and unearthing more of these stories and learning more about these people.
Yeah, really. I don't want to like give it away because I know it's in the book, but just what are a couple of the things that you've caught? You said you caught some cool things on film. And
yeah, I had an incident in the writing room. I won't say what it is. People need to read the book. It was a pretty alarming incident to the point where I actually screamed out loud. Full out screamed.
And then had to apologize for laughing at your friends a couple years prior.
Yeah, I guess, right? So, and I'm not a scream. I don't scream. I don't scream on investigations. I mean, I may cuss maybe when I get scared, but I'm not someone who goes like, oh my God, you know?
Right.
I'm very much a wallflower when it comes to investigating. I like to be on the side and observe the environment. So I tend to keep a pretty cool head. Any of my team members will vouch to me on that. And an incident happened where I screamed. And I screamed twice, actually, because it happened like, the incident happened again, and
oh no,
it was crazy. So one of the guest investigators we had a hunting camera up, and so they're looking at the shots. And after we had left the room, and it was just there, the hunting camera caught something in the exact same spot where the incident happened. So, and we tried to rule out bugs and smudges, and there was no one in the room to smudge up the camera. And It wasn't dust. I had a videographer look at it, and you know, it didn't follow any patterns with the insects or anything like that. So basically the hunting camera picked something up, you know, which is like, oh great. So that thing I was scared of that I thought it was, it might've been that. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't want to be right. Is like, that like hunting camera? Is that like the motion sensor one you mean?
Yes.
Or, okay.
It's a hunting camera. You set it up on a tripod.
Or tied
to a
tree.
It has
night
vision on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Depends if it's
yeah.
hunting or haunting
yeah, yeah,
camera.
Yeah. yeah, so we were able to catch that image. Video-wise, we had the laser grid up, and we caught actually somebody moving across the laser grid.
Oh, very neat.
About the height of a preteen, so I think that was Missy saying hello. I even get chills thinking about now. And also, there's a security camera in the actual main stage area of the 10th, and they've caught some interesting things on that camera. And there have been a few things where Jeff is like, oh, hey, I think I caught something. And I look, and I'm like, Jeff, it's dust. But then there's other things that we've caught that he's caught on that camera. And I'm like, all right, you might have something. And I still get stories from the theater community in San Diego is very small. So I'll have like one of my director friends or actor friends call me up and say, hey, I think one of your ghosts said hi. One of the funnier stories, I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it's in the book, but one company was doing a production about drag queens.
Okay.
And apparently the lights kept flickering or the sound would go out. And you have to think, a show about drag queens in a building that used to be a church.
Oh, no.
The building's haunted by mainly church members.
It doesn't go over well.
God. That's worse than ripped up toilet paper.
So, and I apparently every, because there was a few lines, and I even saw this too, but every time, like, the cast or someone in the cast said herpes, like the lights would go crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I've actually had some of my actor friends who know it's haunted and know that it's haunted by probably some church people. They'll be like, herpes, sex, abortion.
Oh God. Like, flicker,
just
flicker.
Just to get stuff going. And
right.
I'm like, wow, guys.
That's provoking, yeah.
A little bit.
Are there pictures in the book?
Yes, there are.
Oh, sweet. It's my kind of book. No. Cool. All right. So do you have any?
I don't. Thank you.
Cool. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
Just the Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater comes out October 8th. And you can actually pre-order right now for hard copy and Kindle. So.
Okay, great. And where else can it be found once it comes out on the 8th?
Amazon actually has it out on sale right now for pre-order, so you can get it for like $4 off. You can get it on Llewellyn's website as well. If you're on the West Coast, I'm going to be doing a book signing at Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore on the 23rd. And then we're having a huge book launch party on the 24th at the theater. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. You do so many things. It's really impressive.
Thank you.
That's Alex Matsuo. You can check out all the things she does at alexmatsuo.com. That's M-A-T-S-U-O. And check out her latest book, once October 8th, 2015, The Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater, and also the other book she's written as well.
And don't forget liveparanormal.com. You want to learn about all things paranormal.
Perfect. Thanks. It's been another episode of Dead Tribe Paranormal. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to Dead Tribe Paranormal. After you're done, please listen to our other podcast, Rock Stories. In this series, we meet with music artists and bands that are out there keeping the scene alive. We capture and share their stories with you, the fans, and use their music as a soundtrack. Also look forward to new shows like Audibly Anonymous, the show where you, the listener, can anonymously share your deepest secrets. Please visit our website at echopodmedia.com and sign up for our email list on the homepage. There's some new kids on the block, the unsigned hip-hop kids. Listen to me and Mateo spin some exclusive new hip-hop tracks and interview the people keeping the scene alive. There's hours of ear candy to feast on, and me and Mateo cracking jokes in between each song. That's Unsigned Hip-Hop under the podcast tab.
Hello, Mom.